So the question was asked, how far do we take this concept of conforming? When we say that you shouldn't be different than your surroundings, how far does that go? So let's start with simple things, a few concepts in halacha, and we'll try to evolve.
You definitely should make the aliyah. No, today.
So, a few examples that were given here. Well, people around you are doing what's right in halacha, so then it's not a question of conforming to them. It's a question of when will one evolve to the state where one maintains halacha. Well, we hope a person is going to evolve as soon as possible to performing mitzvot and doing halacha. It's a process of growth, but every person is supposed to grow and attain the state where he's keeping all mitzvot. And that's not a question of conforming to other people. It's sad if one feels pressure and one feels he can't grow at his own pace, but that's not our discussion tonight. Every person's supposed to try and grow, and we're supposed to give one another the space to grow. No one knows where someone else is coming from. It's not our job to look over someone else's shoulder or to pressure him to conform. That's not our discussion now. Now, so it's obvious that if everyone else is doing what's right, I should join them. The question sometimes is, what is right? Sometimes there are different opinions in halacha. And I might choose to go with one opinion, but the other opinions also have validity. Let's say I'm davening in a Sephardi shul. So after Chazaras HaShatz, they have a custom what they say. In their Kedusha, they have a custom what they say. In their Kaddish, they say they don't say brichu, they say amen. So I'm going to stand there and say brichu out loud. No, why should I? I'm not supposed to be different than them. So there is a concept of loti to go to do. The Torah tells us don't become groups, and that means that if I'm in a place where the custom is one way, I'm not supposed to change from that place. So if I'm a Sephardi and my custom is that I don't have to stand up for many of the kaddishim and davening, but I'm in an Ashkenazi shul where everyone stands up for Kaddish, I should stand up. If I'm in a shul where the custom is that everyone stands up for Kriyat HaTorah, so I should stand up. A person isn't supposed to be different. Even though a person might say, well, my custom is this way. Well, if you're in a place where everyone does one way, you should do it that way. So there are things where both sides have halachic validity. And sometimes it's just issues of minagim. And nonetheless, we say, don't be different. And this has a halachic weight. There are issues where the side that's doing something doesn't really have halachic validity. There's nothing that says you must do it this way, but you may do it this way. For example, Rabbi Gamliel's children came to a city where the custom was that two brothers don't enter the mikveh together. So there's no halacha that says two brothers may not enter the mikveh together. So they're about to enter the mikveh together, and people start yelling at them, you're two brothers, you don't enter the mikveh together. So they didn't say, guys, it's mutter. They turned around and said, oops, sorry, thank you. And they went in separately. That's a concept, devarim amutarim, there are things that are sometimes permissible. V'acharim nagu b'hem isur, and other people have a custom to treat it as forbidden. Al tatiram b'fnehem, you're not supposed to show them this is permissible. No, if their custom is to treat it with stringency, we don't change their custom. So if some people have a custom that they don't do malacha when the Hanukkah candles are lit, we're not going to come and tell them, no, you could do malacha. We're going to say, fine. That's a custom. It has validity. That's what you do. So that's what you do. And if some women have a custom that they don't do laundry on Rosh Chodesh, we don't come and tell them, no, you could do laundry on Rosh Chodesh. That's a valid custom. It's a custom that's brought in halacha. Some people have it. Some people don't. Some people have the custom on the eve of Pesach, they don't do any malacha. Others have a custom that they do. If you come from a town where they do malacha and you enter a town where they don't do malacha, you're not supposed to change from the customs of that town. If you come from a town where they don't do malacha, the town where they do malacha, so you could sit down and not do malacha, no one's going to know the difference. So we have to show respect, even when halachically there might not be a basis. The mere fact that they behave this way gives it a basis. Now, the question is, how far does that go? So the rule that's brought by Tosfos and that's brought in halacha is that if the city has a rabbi, so long as these people have a rabbinic authority that's guiding them, we assume that their custom doesn't stem from nowhere. There's a famous Rabbeinu Tam that says, Minhag is the letters of Gehinom. Certain customs equal Gehinom. It's true. Certain people get used to certain customs, and the customs have no validity, and not only don't they have validity, but they're wrong. Yes, you have to be a big rabbi like Rabbeinu Tam to say that. But on most customs, the assumption is if there's a rabbi present, if this community has been guided by a rabbinic authority, so then we assume their customs were verified by the rabbis, and we give legitimacy to their customs unless proven otherwise. And it's not going to be easy to prove otherwise. Yeah?
I've been in a community in Hussaret, and there's some things which I thought were against Salaha. And I was speaking with the local rabbi one day, and he said, like, yes, they are. They said, like, yeah, but why do they do that? I mean, like, you are the rabbi, you should have the authority to say, like, what you're doing is not right.
Like what?
And, especially about kashrut, for example, they're like, very lenient about kashrut. You know, it's not okay. And he said, like, yeah, I agree, but it's like, I told them, and they don't do what I say.
Right. Look, in the...
I can't force them to do anything. I told them that Halakha says, you're not doing what Halakha says. And they're like, that's what you do since generations. Our parents did it, our grandparents did it, our grandparents did it, that's how we do it.
So it's not easy to change a custom. There are many customs that the rabbis have tried to fight, and they didn't always succeed. So we're not talking about that. That you'll speak to the rabbi, and you'll find out about that. Now, the rabbi for generations, the rabbis did not have the power they wished. Even in the time of the Mishnah, the rabbis didn't always have the power they wished. Many times the rabbis tried to institute things and the people wouldn't accept it. Look, in Ezra's time, Ezra came and said, you're not allowed to do business on Shabbos. And the Jews wouldn't listen. Ezra had to put together a court that beat people up, pulled people's hair out. When Ezra had a court that was powerful, then he was able to institute. And when he instituted, the first thing he says, you're not allowed to touch any dish on Shabbos. Not allowed to pick up a fork. Because they were coming from the extreme where they were dealing with their pitchfork on Shabbos. So the first institution of Mukta went to the opposite extreme. They said, on Shabbos you don't eat with dishes. No touching dishes on Shabbos. You're not allowed to use a fork or a knife. When the people got accustomed to this concept, then they said, okay, now we'll let you use forks and knives. Now we can be more lenient. So they let go a little bit. But it stemmed from a situation where the rabbis didn't have the power to enforce things without coming down very hard. The rabbis on tradition, when they'd make an institution, they wouldn't explain why they're making an institution, at least for the first year. Because if they'd explain, then everyone would say, yeah, I know why you're saying that, I'm okay, I don't have to worry about that. If they'd say, don't touch a light because you'll come to turn it on, people would say, yeah, I know, I'll touch a light, I won't turn it on. Don't touch a pen, you might come to writing with it. People would say, I could touch the pen, I won't write. All week long I walk around with a pen in my pocket, nothing's going to happen. So whenever the rabbis institute things, they didn't explain because otherwise no one would listen to them. So you're right, there are times when people don't listen, and then the rabbis really, you'll ask the rabbi and he'll tell you, you should do different than everyone else because they're all wrong. Yeah.
But in this case, you don't have to follow the minhag of the place.
And in that case, you not only don't have to follow, you should not follow, and that would not constitute a minhag. So when you have a rabbi present, you're going to ask the rabbi, is it right that they're doing this? When I came to America as a rab, so there were certain things that were being done one way, and I was accustomed from Kotz Arts to do it differently. So I walked in, and after 2 or 3 weeks, I felt a little strange doing them differently. And one of the rabbis in America as a rab came over to me and said, I noticed you're embarrassed from what you're doing. I want you to know you're right and they're wrong. Don't change. That's what he told me. He said, you're right and they're wrong. Don't change your minhag. What you're doing, even though you feel uncomfortable, no one else is doing it, you're right. They're not going to listen to us, so what can we do? So there are times when that's the situation, and then a person shouldn't conform. But many times, we think something's wrong, and really, there's a halachic basis for it. So that's where we have to be careful. It's true that if what they're doing is wrong, then there's no reason to conform. A person walks into yeshiva and he discovers that in this yeshiva, I don't know, what's a good example? In this yeshiva, they say things that he thinks are halachically incorrect. So the first thing he should check is maybe he's wrong. And even if he thinks he's right, maybe there's more to it than he knows. If he still maintains that he's right, so then sometimes it's better not to make waves. You don't have to show everyone you disagree with him. There's no point in showing everyone I'm different than you. What for? You're in a place. You don't have to make fights with the place. Now that's not halacha. That's just practical. Why make issues? Every year we have guys who come here and they say, I'm against Zionism. Okay? But why do you have to say it? Fine. You can be against Zionism. Fine. No one's forcing you to be Zionistic. But this is a yeshiva where everyone's Zionistic. That's the hallmark of the yeshiva. You want to come here and not be Zionistic? No one's telling you to be Zionistic. But to come and make a point of it each time, what for? It's like, there's no reason. And I could think of 10 reasons why not to do it. So let's review what we said until now. We said that there are issues which both sides have halachic basis. There's a concept of lotit godu, not to be different than everyone around us. When there is a halachic basis for what's being done, then there's no reason to be different, and there are many reasons not to be different. When it's a community that has rabbis, we assume that what they're doing has a halachic basis. If we don't understand it, we could go to the rabbi and ask him why not. Sometimes the rabbi will surprise us and say, you're right, don't do like they're doing, just as Daniel pointed out. Sometimes the rabbi will say, I've been trying to get them to change that for years and no one's listening to me. So then really, you have every reason not to do what everyone else is doing, and maybe you'll be able to get the trend going in the right direction. If what they're doing has no halachic basis, or it's a community that has no rabbis, so then you don't have to assume that they know what they're doing. Rav Shtoria Parchi came to Israel, and he went to a shul in Yerushalayim, and he writes in his book, Kaftor Vaferach, that he walked out of shul because they did so many things against halacha, he saw they didn't know how to learn, and he said, I'm not going to start arguing with them, they just don't know how to keep halacha, their shuls aren't run according to halacha. So he came to Jerusalem at a time when there were no rabbis present. He said that the person they call rabbi doesn't know his stuff. So I walked out of shul. I said, I don't want to be part of a congregation that doesn't keep halacha. So he says, the only shul he found in Jerusalem wasn't keeping halacha. They thought they were keeping halacha, and they didn't. So he walked out. So there are situations like that. A person could come, from what I hear in Poland, there are many communities that have no rabbi. So of course they're going to do things that aren't today. So of course they're going to do things that aren't halacha. Here in Israel, you could come to communities here in Kiryat Moshe. Many shuls don't have a rabbi. So I was in a shul, I don't remember where it was, so I didn't want to say anything, but they were doing things against halacha. Where was it? I remember where it was, right near my house, here in Kiryat Moshe. There's halacha about where chazan's supposed to stand. The chazan was standing in the wrong place. There's a reason why Kabbalah Shabbos, we stand in the middle. Because Kabbalah Shabbos isn't a tefillah that Chazal instituted. So to indicate that we're not doing a tefillah that Chazal instituted, the Chazan stands in the middle. When he comes time for Ma'ariv, he goes to the front, the way a Chazan is supposed to be. So this Chazan decided that Shabbos morning, is not going to the front. Why? I don't know. You ever see a Chazan that doesn't stand in the front? I didn't see it. The custom is... What? I don't know. Okay, so I guess they have something to be based on.
Right. They don't have anything for
by the Sephardim, right? That's a Sephardi custom, right? The Sephardi custom is down from the middle, and to the best of my knowledge, the Ashkenazi custom is down from the front. And it's based on different issues. There's a Chasam Sofer that discusses it. There's a reason why we have this custom and they have that custom. Fine. If the shul always downs one way and this guy walks in, the side's down another way. There's a shul here in the neighborhood that the rabbi became old. So on Monday and Thursday, he doesn't have koch to stand up for Vahu Racham. So he sits down. So the whole community decided they're sitting down. I down in the shul, and one day I come in and I see everyone sitting down for Vahu Racham. So I ask the assistant rabbi, I said, what's going on? I see the rabbi sitting down. But I didn't understand why everyone else is sitting down. So he told me the rabbi became old. He doesn't have strength to stand for the Vahu Racham. So he sat down and the community saw him sitting down. So they're all sitting down and I'm trying to explain to them not to do it and no one's listening to me. I'm trying to explain to them, Mechatfila, you're supposed to stand, but no one listens. So what can you do? There are many examples that way. You don't always have to go with what everyone's doing, but you do have to verify what's going on and if there's a halachic basis or some other basis for why they're doing it. So the rule, going back to your initial question, when should one conform and when not, if there is a halachic basis for what they're doing, then there's no reason I should be different. If it's noticeable that I'm different. If what I'm doing isn't noticeable, so I could do what I want, they could do what they want. The second it's noticeable, so then we usually one should try and conform. I say usually because it's hard to encompass every example.
I'm
but
not wearing a t-shirt on
Okay, so
of course it's a problem.
I don't think it's noticeable if a person, if one person's wearing a t-shirt, another one's wearing a button-down shirt. I don't think that's noticeable. I think that would fall under the category of things that aren't noticeable. If you down in a shoe where everyone else wears shorts, if you wear long pants, I don't think that's noticeable.
What part of community like Jerusalem where you have tons of Haredi down the street there that all wear big jackets, big hats, and then you have the guys here that don't, and so when one comes over, could we say that the fact that there's already a different community in the same town, that it doesn't matter if you're entering into an area with tons of people that aren't wanting to be laxed in how they in their ways, that you don't have to be laxed in yourself, just because it's not really going to affect, and they'll just think, oh, he's just one of them coming here.
If it's a situation where one is coming on a one-time basis, so I walk in off the street, very often I'm wearing a hand jacket. So if I walk into America's Rav, I don't have to take off my hand jacket. If I walk into here, I don't have to take off my hand jacket. But if one is going to be a constant member of a community, and in that community what's accepted is a certain dress code, so then one is going to have to really verify if it's legitimate to do that.
There's no dress code. It's just people that are involved in the state, they're coming off from the deep end of Hodu, of India, and so,
Maybe Machon Meir is a place where you could be a little bit more lax because people are coming in from all over, but I think there's what to think about. If one is going to do things that even the Rabbeim and the Rosh Yeshiva don't do, what message is one sending?
Well, some of them do.
Okay.
So
then one should ask one of them. Let's take another example. In Shulchan Aruch it says you're supposed to wear your tzitzis above your garments. Your tzitzis, not just the strings, the whole garment is supposed to be on top. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So let's imagine one person wakes up one morning and he walks around with his tzitzis on top. So they'll ask him, why are you doing that? He'll say, that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. What do you want from me? Why are you not doing that? You ask me why I'm doing that? Why are you not doing that? That's exactly what the halacha wanted to preclude. You're in a place. That's the custom. There's an halachic basis for it. Even though you might have a strong halachic basis for what you're doing. The halacha doesn't want us to do something like that. That's what's going to cause fights. That's exactly what's going to happen. So Chazal said, no, don't make fights. But you'll say, but it says in Shulchan Aruch, it's better to do it my way. Right, but you see everyone else isn't doing it. And there are rabbis here. So why not ask them, verify?
Well, tell us I'm from America. I kind of was born in America. I came here. So they understand he's that guy from America. That's what the American Jews do. They all wear that.
There is such an opinion. There is an opinion that says, being that there are groups and there are people who do that. So if you do it, people will just say, ah, you're one of them. There's what to think about.
Also, I asked Rabbi Mordechai this. Oh, no, I remember. I asked Rabbi Mordechai this question. He told me, especially because I came from America, that it's better that I wear a hat.
Okay.
He told me that I should wear it. And then his main, one of his main talmidim that is very close with the Rav and has personal learning sessions and he's known to be a real talmid of the Rav. He personally told me that because you wear a hat on Shabbos, I don't understand why you're worried about wearing one the rest of the week. You should do it. It's good and important. I actually asked him this after one of the rabbis, someone here, had told me that it would be gava if I wore a jacket and a hat here in Lafayette, just in general. And I asked him where I thought that was, and he told me, no, that wouldn't be gava. As a matter of fact, because you're from the Kutz Lars, it'd be preferable that you wear a hat. And then I was told by his first boy, it was the first minute, so,
Did you mention to Rav Eliyahu that you're in Machon Meir where no one
else
does?
Yeah, he knows
what I'm saying. Okay, so there are people who have that opinion. There is, that's what I started saying before. There is an opinion that says, being that there is a group that does this and there is validity to this, and if you do it, so people will just think, okay, he's one of them, fine. I seem to remember, maybe I'm wrong, but I seem to remember that you once showed me a letter in which you asked him this question, and I seem to remember his saying in the end, ask your Rabbeim Machon Meir, whatever they say is what you should do.
No, that was a different question. That was a different question. Okay. That's this question he didn't
specify. Okay. What kind of hat, but maybe it's a cowboy hat, baseball hat.